Welcome back, gentlemen. Again, we've found the perfect time to have three disparate time zones where you can sit down and chill for a little bit. It sounds like Mike tomorrow's a no. Mike, you're always just chilling.
Pretty much.
And Steve, tomorrow's like a holiday over there in HK.
Today's a holiday. Today is International Workers' Day.
Ah. Oh.
May Day. It's May Day.
Yeah. That's right.
Yeah, proletariat. Yeah.
The proletariat shall rise.
And that's why we're all chilling. That's an international holiday.
It is an inner. Well, it's.
We don't celebrate it in the United States.
You don't celebrate it in the United States.
We deliberately changed ours to a different
day. That's right. That's right.
Day.
Yeah. I think it was in the 1800s. There were like too many workers getting uppity, so they changed it to a different day. Which it doesn't really make that much sense, but
I have a very nice Seagull mechanical watch that's a May Day commemorative.
Oh, really? It's a Chinese brand, isn't it?
Yeah, it's really nice, man.
Oh, yeah, Seagulls awesome. Are pretty nice.
Yeah.
I should get one of those. There's like some, I do have like a knockoff Seagull of the Air Force watch, mm-hmm. like the 1963 or whatever.
Oh, is it the chronograph?
Order. Yeah, it's like a hand-wind chronograph. It looks really cool.
That's an incredible thing to be able to make at a cheap price point is a mechanical chronograph.
It is.
The dirty secret of the Swiss watch industry is a lot of their components are made in China, and they're that Swiss made legislation where you have to have like certain requirements to put Swiss made on your watches. That shit is all crafted around the realities of like how much of their shit is made in China.
Wow.
Yeah. It's kind of like that. It's just like a contrived set of rules that they have to follow, right? To slap the label on it.
Yeah, it's like percentage made in country, percentage assembled, a percentage. It's all based on percentages.
At the end of the day, I mean, they could do that stuff, I'm sure, in Switzerland entirely, but it's just
too expensive.
It's just too expensive. I mean, yeah, they want to keep their profit margins.
Gotta keep those margins.
They want to maximize those margins.
Yeah. 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 Same and I guess they calculate parts. Like most of the margin is right. in the thing that says legitimately Swiss made. Legally Swiss.
Lamborghinis are turning into German cars and German cars are turning into Chinese cars and
yeah, all that shit's made in China.
It's all gonna be made in China.
Which is the topic of the day is real assets.
Real assets.
Not fake, not phony financial assets, not fiat currency, and I'm not even talking about crypto. Though we'll set that aside for some other time. But real assets, things. I don't know. Lately, I have been a little bit paranoid, I guess, about. Like the status of cash and money and whether that's actually going to be like a good store of wealth. And I've been really changing my thinking around what wealth even is and how to preserve it. And, you know, it started making me think like, man, the government really can just inflate away the shit out of your hard-earned cash.
Yeah.
What do you, I think of that, the cash is something, they're like little pinchers that I can use to go pinch stuff. What the hell did I just do?
What did you do?
It just set off.
Did some balloons come up on the screen?
Is that a little secret? Okay. Yeah, all these balloons just patched up because I was doing my crab hands. But I think of the money as like little pinchers that I can go and grab something real with. I can buy something.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I mean, wealth is thinking like, what do I buy? Now, I've bought some gold, but in the form of a fucking stock ETF, right? So it doesn't really feel real. So I just figured I'd kick it. I'd set that up. I'd tee that up as a topic because I know you guys have thought about it.
Before we get into that, I would just point out that you have, I think over the last like maybe a year or something, gone from being a hardcore T-bill aficionado and treasury aficionado to like, screw fiat, give me some real shit.
I'm only into short-term T's in the sense that I don't want, I'm risk off. And so I finally found something that gives me anything. But I just like it in comparison to the stocks.
Yeah, I mean,
okay.
But it's always just kind of like a staging area, right? Short-term treasuries. Okay. This was something else.
Okay, so it was more your disdain of stocks than.
I'm just excited that they're giving me anything. You know, it's been virtually my whole adult life. They've basically given you nothing for saving. So finally, they're giving you something, and I'm like, okay, I'll take it.
But, the last time was like 2005 or whatever.
Yeah, exactly. And I had like no money. I was a fucking student at Columbia in 2005.
Yeah, your $5,000 checking account is not.
Yeah,
exactly. Back in 2005 is like fucking useless for even at 10%. It's like who
exactly.
cares?
And the thing that really made me excited about that 5% number is that's roughly the return right now on investment property in New York City. So
they're paying you rent
on your money.
You know? Same out here.
They're paying you New York, LA rents on your money. So I'm like, fucking sweet. Let's do it.
Yeah.
It's not going to last forever, I'm sure. Maybe it'll go up. Maybe it'll go down. I don't know. But the point is, what do you do with the cash, right? I think a short-term tease is cash equivalents.
For people who are listening who don't know why this is so important right now, like the government is just spending money like crazy. They're just going out of control with debt spending. So in order to make that like not existential, they have to inflate away the debt somehow or another. And that means your non-inflationary tracking investments will just get slaughtered over time, including cash.
Yeah. Yeah.
So the question is, what do you do instead?
Here's a threshold question. Why not just convert my USD into some other currency? Is that not helpful? I'm convinced that it's not very helpful.
It's not helpful because other countries are going to have to print to keep up with the U.S.
Why do they have to print? In the end,
they will all print.
Why?
All print. At least all the major ones, right? Like, even before we get to that question, it's like, okay, what are your potential options, right, of other fiat currencies?
Japanese yen, which would be terrible.
Yeah, well, yen is, that's a special case.
RMB, which seems to be tied to the US dollar. It's not
pseudo-pegged.
Really,
it's managed.
Yeah.
And quite inaccessible in a lot of ways. Right?
But I gather it would inflate along with the US dollar.
Yeah, so my understanding is based on the work of some like macro commentators. Basically what's going to happen is as the government prints more to fund their debt, to keep up with the debt, the interest rates are going to have to go down at some point, go up. The rates will go up because people are like, I don't want to lend money to the government. You're going to have to give me a higher rate, right? So the long end of the curve will go up, meaning money will get more expensive. And that means that the dollar will go up in value, even though the US is printing. However, prices are also going to inflate. So it's going to be like this triple whammy, right? Like rates are going to go up, inflation's going to go up, but also the dollar is going to go up. So the dollars you have...
What does that mean, the dollar is going to go up?
Compared to other currencies. Right, because why would anyone want to hold yen when it's yielding 0.5% and the dollar is yielding 5 or 6?
Which is exactly what's happening. The yen's crazy.
That's exactly what's happening.
Yes.
Yeah,
exactly. Yes. Like the USD still offers among like pretty much the highest interest rates in the world among the major currencies.
Yeah. Really? So in other words, in order to keep up with the inflation, you have to hold the dollars and you have to get paid the rates that the government is paying, basically.
Yeah.
But isn't that the trouble on that for the US, that the dollar
would go up, but inflation is that. That
yeah, but it's only going up compared to other currencies. Compared to hard assets, it's going down.
So does that mean that inflation would be worse if you weren't holding the dollar?
Yes. Look at Bitcoin or gold compared to the yen or whatever. It's gone up even further.
Yeah. Like if you measure like sort of world assets in that sense, other currencies are.
Yeah. So by dollar going up, I just mean it goes up against other fiat. Yeah.
So should we think of the dollar therefore as just sort of fiat currency generally?
Like it's just a proxy for every kind of fiat.
Your way out of the dollar
is not through another currency.
No, I suspect not because I think like look your other options are yen, which is a complete basket case. Euro, which I mean, it's not terrible, right? Sterling, complete joke. Canadian dollar, complete joke.
Sterling got murdered.
Swiss franc is too small. and kind of quasi-euro. RMB, difficult to access. And
Argentinian pesos, those are stabilizing.
Those are the highly regarded Argentinian peso.
Yeah.
Am I forgetting anything?
Canadian dollars.
Canadian dollars. Canada sucks. Canada sucks.
Canada's like, yeah, they're on the verge of cutting interest rates.
You don't think those are like really, those are really good rock coupons, like mineral coupons?
No? I mean, you've basically got like three quote unquote big ones, right? Euro, RMB, yen. You've got a bunch of like medium ones, sterling, Canada, Aussie, which got their own question marks. And then you have effectively city state currencies like Singapore and Switzerland and maybe like the Scandies. Those are like tiny. Right.
So let's just categorize all this. It's not even just an issue of holding US dollars. It's an issue of holding cash, fiat cash, right?
Yeah. Yep. I think so. Yeah. I think so.
Regardless of currency, because we're going through some sort of world debt cycle or something where debts are spiraling.
Everyone's printing.
The interest on that debt is spiraling. Banks are revving up the printers. It's an HP LaserJet world. The question is, all right, for those of us with a little bit of, I'm trying to get those balloons going again.
Those balloons were like were basically the fruits of generative AI.
The balloons came from behind me.
I know.
It's pretty cool.
That's why NVIDIA is like a $3 trillion company.
Yeah. That's why we don't have flying cars. It's because we have fucking balloons on our video chats.
Random balloons.
Okay. So the other options. Stocks. I don't like stocks. I feel like they're part of the inflation. They're further into the inflation rabbit hole than anything else, as far as I can tell. I feel like it's even worse than buying real estate. Because it's not real.
So I'm not 100% convinced that stocks are good or bad during inflationary times. Like the only thing that people have to really go off of in the modern era is during the 70s. And they kind of went nowhere for 15, 20 years, i.e. they ended up where they started over that time period. But they also went up and down a lot. And they also were not printing massive amounts of money during that time. So it's not a one-to-one. I don't know the answer. I'm just not convinced of either one. It's not a one-to-one analog from today to the 70s.
I think psychologically for me, it's more like the stocks that I do own, I don't feel compelled to sell them, but I absolutely do not feel any motivation to go buy more stocks.
Like people say that energy does well and other things don't do as well because, you know, energy is like they've already got their CapEx spent and they don't have to borrow new money. And I don't
fundamentally like the asset. The asset is like the asset is a de facto real asset, right?
Also, energy seems to me a bit like gold mining stocks. Like it's very contingent on the price of a commodity.
And yeah, so it's a levered play on the commodity.
Yeah, I feel like it's almost like some sort of option, like an optionality on the price of oil.
And also, that's just what people trade when the shit goes up. So you can just ride that wave as well.
Yeah.
The other example for stocks though is the LATAM debt crisis and inflations, which I think were in the early 90s. And in that case, or maybe some of them may have been the 80s as well, but in that case, stocks did quite well. They did well in local currency terms, right?
Yeah, apparently the Argentinian stock market is going up a lot right now.
Yeah, yeah. But that's mostly because the Argentinian currency is just...
Yeah, it's going to shit.
Yeah, because like everything has to be priced in something, right? So like I guess you could in the LATAM case, you could, I to be honest, I don't know what the numbers were, but you could look at the price of the Mexican stock market in dollars, in US dollars instead of pesos, right? And did that go up or down?
Yeah.
I suspect down. But the thing with stocks is like it's probably better than like more fiat-y alternatives. Stocks are still real assets at the end of the day, but that kind of inflation.
No, they're not real.
Probably.
Assets. I don't think they're real assets.
Well, okay, we can debate.
Well, it's a claim. It's an ownership claim on a business
but it's so fictional at this point. Come on.
That's
the only real aspect of stocks to, in my mind, are dividends and stock buybacks, which stock buybacks are at very high levels. So
that's
in a valuation of cash distributions in that sense. But
that's a valuation
insofar
argument, right?
As the other indicia of the value of stocks. All right, let's just throw like control and voting like out of the water. Maybe merger premium, like if the company you buy is the target of a takeover, I could see that. But really, the only thing that I can see that's real about it are active cash distributions through dividends and stock buybacks.
Yeah, so that's the value of the stock to the end user, right? So, but that's like within stocks, right? There are posit that there are stocks.
But I'm saying like it's not real in the sense that the primary value of stocks these days, to me, it seems to be just it's a bet on how much more money is coming into stocks behind you.
Yeah, the Ponzi side of things is taking over stocks, basically.
Yeah,
that can apply to a lot of real assets, right? Or it can apply to a lot of assets.
I'm sure there are real... Okay, maybe we should talk about what's real versus not a real asset. By real asset, I mean that it has some sort of intrinsic value or intrinsic existence apart from market price.
So you mean something you can touch?
Yeah, I think so.
An intrinsic existence other than the price of it in the market.
Like it has utility.
Okay, fine.
It has utility I don't know. I mean, like a collector car, like doesn't have much utility, I guess. You could drive it around, but I mean, who would really do that?
Somebody.
I don't think people are paying that much to drive it, right? I mean, I think there still is an aspect of like, well, I think that it just has this inherent value. I guess I mean real just like in a more psychological sense of real, like
I would say that people do buy collector cars in order to drive them. I mean, there's a lot of different like sub philosophies in cars, but
okay. I mean, sure, but I'm saying that it's not real. I mean, there's more to it than just the drivability.
There's more to it than that. Yeah, a lot of it has to do with desirability in general.
It's like a first edition book. I mean, first edition book can fetch.
Yeah, the real asset there is the exclusivity thereof.
It's the exclusivity and the fact that they're not making older cars.
Yeah, they're not making. I mean, for example, like when it comes to, it's not. I guess like for a book, the use value is I can read it. I can carry it with me and I can read it. But the first editions still carry a premium, and they're not like a better experience when it comes to reading, are they? You know, I don't think so.
I don't know. Like holding it is a better experience. Seeing it on your shelf is a better experience. I mean, this gets very philosophical at the end of the day.
Yeah, but I'm just saying strictly in the very strict sense of what is a book good for, I can read it.
Right. The utilitarian
aspect. There's so much more like psychological.
Is the same. That's right.
You know, stuff
around
it.
What do you think about like a fancy collector Porsche versus a Toyota Corolla? Right?
Exactly.
The value of a Toyota Corolla is 100% in its function.
A to B.
In its strict function. Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the value of that Porsche is like probably 98% in
there's a mistake
the exclusivity value. Yeah.
And I guess what I'm saying is I find that financial assets hold no mystique. Like there's no, you know, you don't take a sure stock and go, ooh, look at that. You know, like it's purely about.
It's commoditized.
Like, yeah. It's just totally about market price. I feel like there's a lot of like real stuff that people like where it's kind of like. Is the value of it actually deeper than simple market price? Because I wonder if right now we're living in a era where market price is absolutely the bottom foundational, you know, marker of value. And I'm starting to wonder if there's maybe something more than that. Like people are more.
Just so you understand like where your mindset is, like how would you characterize like a barrel of oil or a bushel of wheat? Like what's your sort of
insofar as the
apply the framework
investor,
to that and
they're no different than stocks. You know what I mean? They're physical commodities, yes, but I'm just saying that they hold no for the person buying them. If I were to buy oil futures or shares in
oil ETF forget about the futures part. The futures part, but like the physical commodity.
I mean, I'll never see it. I'll never touch it. I'm not going to hold a barrel of oil in my house, you know, or a bushel of wheat.
Okay, sure, fine. But you can have
gasoline in your Corolla. Gasoline in your Corolla. That gives me some kind of claim on that you know, somewhere, a fungible claim on some notional amount of wheat or oil, and it has no physicality at all.
Okay. So the kind of interesting thing to me here is like you're focusing very much on like what you as a person can do with it rather than like, okay, I mean, this is somewhat contrived, but if I had a barrel of oil, it has value in the sense that somebody else out there can actually use that. Right. I could sell it to them.
I guess I'm wondering.
So in the economy, in a society, this has value. Right.
I guess what I'm wondering is this. I have a certain amount saved up.
Yeah.
I have some money to my name. Right. Do I just keep that stuff in, you know, sort of these securitized assets and have my wealth be reflected to me in a brokerage statement and in a series of bank account statements? Or at some point, should I consider converting that stuff into something real? Let me give you, like, this is where my head's at, right? I went to a great art exhibit with my wife over the weekend. One of my favorite artists. He's actually a Californian named Wayne Thiebaud. Very famous in California because he designed one of your special edition license plates. And he actually had the original drawing of that plate at this exhibit. And I've loved him for a long time. And I was thinking, you know what, if this was at a private art gallery, so I wasn't sure if like some of this stuff was on sale. I don't think it was, but at some point I was like, you know what, if I could actually afford one of his paintings and I really loved that painting, I think I might buy it. But of course, I looked it up and, you know, Christie's is, I mean, some of his paintings are going for like $4 million. So I'm like, missed the train on that one like a long time ago. Right. But, you know, maybe there's another something out there, you know, like thing that I would never think about buying, like a painting.
But see, that's the thing. You said you missed a train, but in order to catch that train, you have to kind of take the risk of buying something that nobody else thinks is awesome.
Yeah.
Or only a select few people who care and are nerdy about it.
Yeah. And those select few people may not be able to, like, it may not become so widespread that the price actually goes up.
No, I loved this guy for a long time. And if I had money earlier in an earlier part of my life, I might've been able to catch this stuff when it was selling for like $100,000.
But I want to ask you, like, were you looking at catching this so that you could have it or so that you could have the associated gain?
See, that's what I'm trying to sort out here, because I feel like the allure of it for me was not in the potential for financial gain, but in the actual feeling of owning something that I really love.
Ah, okay. So
and,
you're talking
and,
like...
And I get, I'm starting to wonder, actually, if by doing that, by having more... buying things that you love, do you end up with a mix of things that you own that will improve your life and also retain value?
Yeah, that's how I look at it, right? Like the stuff that I buy that fit into the general category of like alternative investments, i.e. real assets, are things that I absolutely would buy even if they went to zero. Mm. Like if it were a pure consumer item, like a pair of shoes or something that just goes to zero over the next 10 years, I would still buy it. But you know, like I was saying in the chat, like there's a Venn diagram of that stuff and the stuff that other people also want. So it can't just be like your personal weird fetish. It has to overlap with the rest of the world in terms of what people are eventually going to either want more or eventually recognize as something that's desirable.
Part of it I think is that if you really love something, you're probably not the only person who feels that way.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like it may not at the moment be like the fashionable thing. Maybe a lot of people just don't know about it, but I find it rare that like I love something, but nobody else gets it, you know? And I'm starting to wonder if I should like, well, I definitely feel like I'm trying to be more mindful of things that really draw my attention and my eye. And I'm like, yeah, that thing's awesome. Or, you know, and maybe it's a little bit beyond what I would think about paying normally for stuff.
Well, the challenge is that it feels like spending money, right? it doesn't feel like an investment. When you buy a stock or a bond, your brain tells you this is an investment.
It's almost when I buy security, it's almost like I'm in the slow lane. You capitalize the fast lane.
Yeah. So when you're buying an alternative asset, like a car or a piece of art or a fucking watch, or for women for like fashion stuff like handbags, your brain is telling you you're spending it. Like you're never going to see this money again. Yeah. And the people on Instagram are flashing this shit to get clout. Yeah. So what the fuck are you doing?
The Instagram right. people, you know, for them, it's a business.
An example of that was I was down in Palm Beach, and my friends who are sort of like casual watch fans, we went to this really fancy watch store in Palm Beach. And I was, you know, I'm like, I don't even really want to be there. And the salesman, there was nobody there. So the salesman starts talking to me, and I had my eye on the Rolex Milgauss, and he was like, Milgauss. He was like, you know what?
I have one of those.
Yeah. He was like, this is a good buy because
I'll look this up.
That's why I bought it. Yeah, I bought mine when it was $5,000.
Yeah, it was for like $49.50, right?
Yeah, that's exactly the price.
One with the green face and sort of.
I have the white. This looks.
How come? Wait, why don't people like this? This looks.
He just said it wasn't popular. He was just like,
it's just not popular.
It was a poorly reviewed watch for whatever reason. I don't know. And I was like, well, I don't know anything about Rolexes at all. I don't care. But I was like, I think it's a nice looking watch. He
yeah, was like, I don't know if I would pay. 85,000 Hong Kong dollars for it.
See, it's gone up.
That's about 11 US.
I'll use this as I have one of those, and I bought it when it was less than $5,000, and I'll walk you through my mindset when I got it.
Okay.
Yeah.
So the reason the Milgauss was created back in the day, the one that you saw was probably the newer one. There's an older one from like the 50s or 60s or something. And I'm not a Rolex expert. This is just what I know because I bought one. The case on the watch was resistant to electromagnetic interference.
Yeah, it's like a Faraday cage or something.
It's a Faraday cage, right? Yeah. So that means if you're working around high power electricity, it's not going to fuck up the movement of the watch and fuck up your time.
Hence the Gauss.
At the time, I was running a company where I was in a data center all day. Or not all day, every day, but like I'd have to go into the data center, and I'm an engineer, right? And this is an engineer's watch. So I'm like, all right, well, we closed a deal and like the company got a bunch of money and I paid myself a little bit extra. And I was like, okay, I'm going to buy a watch to commemorate this because this is a big deal in my life at the time. So I was like, oh, I think I'll buy a Rolex. Like I really like this Milgauss because it's an engineer's watch. It has some quote unquote function, even though it's kind of like an obsolete like concept these days of electromagnetic interference on the watch, right? It doesn't really mean anything, but it's symbolic. So I was like, okay, what's the cheapest Rolex out there? There was like really cheap ones at the time, like $2,000, just plain, you know, whatever Rolexes that had nothing special about them. I was like, that's not really interesting. I think I'll just get this Milgauss. Okay, what's the cheapest Milgauss? It's the white one because nobody fucking wants it, right? I'm like, I like white watches. Like this looks fine to me. It's got this cool orange color, like, and it's got a nice.
I think I saw that. Yeah, that is like, I think I'll
get this, and I'm like, you know, I don't think it's going to get any cheaper than $5,000. Like, I don't think this is going to sell for $3,000 or $2,000, you know. So I think this is a safe buy. I like the watch; I'll wear it all the time. So I just bought it, and then like 4 or 5 years later, it's worth $15,000.
Wait, but did it feel like you were spending money in that sense?
It did actually. It did, yeah. Because like, I'm probably never going to sell. Like, if I have to sell my Rolex Milgauss, that means
gone. This is your last. You're Christopher Walken. Like, you're literally pulling it out of your ass, going,
"Yeah, exactly.
What will you take for this? Because I got nothing else."
Right. So you know, like, if I have to sell it, it's bad news. But at the time, I was like, "Yeah, this is like it was $5,000. It was more than I had ever spent on like something like that. That's for sure."
That's an interesting point about how you probably would never sell it unless you had to. Doesn't it at that point it becomes kind of like an heirloom?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
However,
but
if one day I'm like, I just want to get like if one day I just wake up and I'm like, why the fuck do I even have this? I'm just gonna sell this shit along with my, you know, two other watches that I have.
The thing is you could sell it.
Yeah, I could sell it. Like if I just don't care anymore or whatever. You know, you never know. You get older, you shit, you know, your tastes change or whatever. I could sell it for 3 or 4 times what I bought it for. Like just walk into a watch dealer, and because I only, you know, I bought it when it was five. So even if it's selling for 15 and the spread is like 10%, it's still a lot more than what I paid for it, and it's easy money. So
yeah, and you can like that 10%, you got to wear it for like 10 years or whatever, right? So there's your 10%.
Well, it would be two or three times, you know, the value that I paid for it. But yeah, I mean, so that's the general mindset. And, you know, like over the years, the stuff that I'm interested in, like I've bought a bunch of stuff like that. And, you know, I have
How funny is that, though, that you were both we were specifically talking about the Milgauss, because that's exactly, you know, I was basically being told, this salesman was actually trying to do me a favor, you know?
Yeah.
I was like, because I was like, okay, well, I guess I'm the only fucking know-nothing that likes this watch. I guess the people who know something about Rolex realize that this is an inferior watch, which is maybe part of the reason I didn't consider buying it, that on top of the fact that I just don't really like Rolexes that much. But
I'm not like a super into watches guy, so I didn't know, and I didn't care.
Yeah, you didn't care about like the what are your
watches. So I got lucky on that one.
5,000 doesn't require, I don't think, like huge amounts of.
Yeah,
if you're gonna spend 50,000, I think you should probably know a lot more about what you're doing. You know.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
I mean, you know, this. Like, you know, I mean, yeah, I mean, but for the purposes of this conversation, this is just like stuff that. Like a professional person can just buy without like breaking the bank or whatever, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean,
it's a men's handbag.
Yeah.
Effectively.
Yeah. So, anyways, like my point is just that in order to like, so I'm not a watch guy, but I am a car guy. I definitely am a car. Like, I know about,
you know, a lot about cars. Yeah.
I know all the shit you need to know about which cars to buy. And so I got lucky on the watch thing, but also that can definitely apply to cars. Then the cars that I'm into are, you know, can follow along those lines. One interesting thing is like all these shitty Japanese sports cars from the 90s have all fucking skyrocketed in value.
Yeah. I saw a 3000 GT VR4 the other day, and then I saw it again. In a completely different cherry. Hey,
actually, are there are people going to like pick up all the old used cars from Japan and ship them over now that the yen?
Yes, that's a huge business right now.
That's like, yeah, huge that's business. Like going. The country's getting cleaned
millions
out.
Millions upon millions of dollars, is being shipped back and forth between U.S. and Japan.
I heard all the retro gaming shit has been bought up.
By sweaty neckbeards.
Dude, like a Sony, this isn't like investment class stuff, but like a Sony Trinitron CRT. Is worth hundreds of dollars right now.
Yeah.
Because old 40-year-old nerds are willing to pay whatever it takes to get that shit again because they grew up playing Super Nintendo or whatever on a Sony Vega.
One aspect of American sci-fi that I really like, or maybe it's sci-fi in general, but American sci-fi has this a lot, is the a future where the people living, say, hundreds of years in the future look at things that we take for granted, like fresh coffee, actual organic live pets, you know, fresh food, all that stuff is like real, and artwork as like really, really luxurious stuff.
I think it already is kind of.
It's getting that way, right?
Right. Like you can't. And because it's
coffee is going to be a luxury item pretty soon, from what I
mean, dude. Cocoa, did you see fucking
cocoa's
the price
gone
of cocoa?
Crazy? Yeah, it's like quadrupled this year.
Something's happening.
Shame, man.
Yeah, something's happening in these commodity markets where people are just going crazy. And you know, that's obviously
the death of coffee is baked into climate change, which is really
probably
kind of terrible.
That's crazy. That's pretty terrible.
Probably. Yeah. I mean, if you think about it, like. Food is definitely a real asset. Like it on the margin, it's not worth very much, but like how much do people pay for, you know, fresh organic produce and, you know, fresh coffee and all that stuff. I mean, the price is getting up there. It's becoming a straight up luxury good.
I just wonder if that's the future, you know, is like people dealing in real products, like real things of increasing value. That's like steadily going up all the time. And your job as an investor, not like, let's get rid of the word investor, you know, like that implies that there's a group,
there's a money commodity money thing happening, right? And you are talking about the personal real asset to you as a person.
Yeah, I guess I'm just like not feeling this whole, you know, corporatization, like fundification of your own personal.
Yeah,
you are, but that's because you know how to do it. I mean, that's your life. You are.
I mean, I think it's that's one part of it. Another part of it is like I don't physically have space here to like buy too many of these things.
Yeah, so I was just going to say the fresh food and coffee. I mean, all that stuff is intimately tied to big land, big amounts of land, right? So none of that stuff is available without the most real of all assets.
The realest real asset
of them all, which is land. So you have to have land to produce that stuff. Exactly. So people who live out in the country are privy to certain luxuries that city people have to pay out the ass for, like fresh tomatoes or whatever.
Yeah. I mean, getting really good fresh vegetables is a luxury now.
It's definitely. It is.
You know, getting really good produce, really good fruit, I mean, expensive. It's going to cost you. Unless you're really, you know, willing to eat the wholesale product, which is, you know, the barely ripe tomatoes.
You know what, though? Like, I think spending an extra 10, 20, even 30% on food probably does have a disproportionate impact on like your true well-being.
Oh, for sure.
You know, more than like I don't know how much is 30% on a food budget for a person for a year? Like I'm not talking
depends
restaurants.
On
I'm
what
talking,
you're
like,
talking
groceries.
About. I think it's true for meat. I think
so
you probably want to spend a little bit more for meat, but I've found that generally speaking, I've noticed the cheaper the fruit, the better, because it means that it's super in season. There's a lot of it. So there's an
yeah, that's fine. That's fine. So, yeah. You want to be paying for the fruit.
There's little optimizations.
Yeah.
There's little optimizations you can make, like go to the farmer's market or whatever. But I actually had this conversation with Jess. My parents, for the longest time, were super fucking cheap on their food budget. Mm. And I would always give them shit for it. And they would always give me shit for like shopping at, you know, Whole Foods or whatever.
Yeah, and they're like, why are you spending like an extra 50 cents?
What were they doing, dude,
get this. 10 years ago, my mom gets a checkup and she has fucking like pre-osteoporosis or whatever. Mm-hmm. And I straight up yelled at her. I was like, this is because you don't eat any fucking protein. Like you spend tiny amounts of money on food. You feel guilty every time you buy like good chicken. Or whatever, or pork. Now your fucking health is going south. Like you can't eat cheap ass food all the time.
Yeah,
like
to save $500 a year. To save $500 a year, basically.
Yeah, this is like this is ridiculous. Yeah. So I sat them down and I just like yelled at them. Basically, you know, no, I didn't
that,
literally.
That,
yell
like
at them.
That generation.
No, I understand
that generation. That's how they are.
I was like, this is like the stupidest thing in the world. Like you literally are starving yourself.
You know. Dude, I totally understand where you're coming from. I used to get fucking railed on by my father because like he would give me the shittiest food, like literally like bread that's gone hard. And then I'd have to eat it for my fucking breakfast and I'd be like, I didn't want to eat it. And then he'd start yelling at me for being picky. He'd say, you're picking on food. And he would yell at me and I'm like, but this food sucks.
Yeah,
and then, okay, first year of college, my dad got colon cancer. And he thought he was going to die. And right before they wheeled him into the OR, he beckoned for me to come to him. And I said, yeah. And he said, remember when I used to yell at you for picking on your food? I said, yeah. He was like, that was wrong. You got to eat good food.
Oh, man.
He had a change of heart because he thought he was going to die. So let me tell you, they act tough until they meet the Reaper. And then they're like, no, take it all back.
Yeah.
Everybody's got a plan until they go into the OR.
Everyone's got a plan until they're getting into
with
the OR.
With uncertain outcomes.
Yeah, exactly. So now I go home and their fridge is stocked with fresh eggs and meat and like good veg and all that stuff. And I'm like, this is great.
Good.
And they're going to like the local, like, you know, I don't think they're at Whole Foods, but they're at this place called Sprouts, which is like the budget Whole Foods.
Yeah, I've heard of it, yeah.
Yeah,
it's like organic stuff, and
yeah, it's like organic, like organic high quality meat and veg and all that stuff.
Yeah,
so like the base of their diet was like just like traditional Chinese food, which is fine, but they would just get the cheapest fucking ingredients and like none of the good stuff. And it's like, dude, what the? Anyways.
Yeah. No. I hear you. I feel like, I'm starting to turned the corner where I'm starting to be like, there's a difference between, okay, so I think I am frugal. I mean, I enjoy being frugal, but I think the difference, I'm not cheap. I think the difference between frugal and spendy, being spendy, which I think a lot of my friends are spendy and I criticize them for it. I think people who are spendy really just like buying stuff. Like, what I mean is, like, they like the act of purchasing. Where I feel like frugality, you really like the act of using what you got. Like, when I buy something, I like to use it. And the more I use it, and the more functionality and value that this thing is giving me, the more I like
it. Like, there's an intrinsic value to utilizing what you have.
Yeah, yeah, my psychological attachment to something increases the more I use it.
Yeah, yeah,
and the more this thing comes through for me. But I think cheap is literally like just hating. It's like the opposite of spending. It's like, I hate spending money. And that's not,
yeah,
not
well, yeah, I hate spending money. So one thing that, I think we were talking about this earlier, is it's good to be an enthusiast about the stuff that you spend money on.
Yeah, because, I'd agree with that.
Because then you understand why it's better and what you're getting for your money. And also you are more in a position to if let's say you buy something and it breaks, you can actually, you have the ability and the wherewithal and the motivation to like fix it, not just like replace it, right?
Yeah.
Like replacing stuff, I think, is, or just throwing shit out that breaks, is one of the worst parts of modern consumer culture.
Often, especially for like electronics and stuff, right?
Yeah. Like if you can spend wisely on something that you can actually fix either yourself or, you know, pay someone to fix it when it breaks, then I think that's a sign that you're going in the right direction in terms of like where you're spending your money.
I think it's also just a general skill in life. It's a thing to be able to appraise the value of the things that you're buying,
and maybe even fix them if you get that far into it.
You said something that was really interesting, which is like, which I totally agree with, as a sort of, it's not universal, but I think generally you should start from this premise that a lot of times it's the mid-tier product that's the worst value, though it presents often as the best value because it's sort of the best of both worlds, and
it's trying to trick upper middle class people into buying it.
Yeah,
when it's actually a piece of garbage.
The first time I really heard that was in one of my first law firm jobs. There was this guy; he was a British guy, and he was like super into clothing, and he actually like sold clothes on the side, and he was telling me like, dude, either buy really good, like tailored clothing that you're paying, I mean, frankly, a lot of money for, or buy something from go to like discount brands and stuff. He's like, the worst shit ever is like buying Banana Republic suits. He's like,
yeah, that's the middle is terrible.
The worst fucking. I don't not totally sure that's right anymore, but I get what he's saying. He's like, especially back then, because Banana Republic was not. It's gone down market since then, I think. Clothing in general has gone down market a bit, I think. But he was basically saying, yeah, it's that mass consumer stuff that's sold as like near luxury. The premium mediocre stuff where he's like, yeah, you're getting crushed on that stuff.
I agree. That's kind of my personal philosophy with clothes as well. Like my night, like 80% of the time, I'm just wearing super cheap shit, like Amazon Basics level. But my nice clothes are really expensive. Like I have a full custom. I have two full custom tailor suits, like made from like patterns that they measured on my body.
Yeah,
and I had to go in like four full times
bespoke.
To get it
full bespoke.
Full bespoke. Yeah, full bespoke,
not the made what not made to measure. Fit or whatever.
Not the not the off the rack like cut to tailored fit or whatever. It's like full bespoke. But I mean, I only wear those like when I really need to. And generally speaking, like
forever, right?
What's that?
Those will last you forever. So
yeah, it'll last me my entire life. But I mean, when I'm just going out, I just wear t-shirts that are basically disposable. So it's, I don't know. Like my, and then I
you
have
the
like,
same applies to cars. that
cars
like
are, cars are, I find cars a little tricky though, right? Actually
bad deals or what?
Well, the thing about cars though is that you can buy used cars that are very, very good value and then drive them for a very long time. So you can by the way, this is just all my personal philosophy, right? Like I have no like.
But that's what's
desire to get
to me, you know, like what are people's personal philosophies about?
Yeah, like I don't think anyone should live their life a certain way. If you want to buy nothing but whatever, like I really just don't care. Like I don't even look at this stuff on other people. It's just how I present myself. Right?
Yeah.
So
you do what you like to do. You have your own way of going about it.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
It's not about right or wrong, but I do think that having a philosophy or approach to consumption as a matter of your own personal preferences is important. I think the meta consumer that's kind of buying things solely based on what you think other people might think, you know, like where you're kind of off outsourcing your decision making, I think is bad.
Yeah, I mean it's not bad, it's just you're not going to get much for it, right?
Well, like
I would mildly disagree with that in the sense that like I think in many contexts, that's probably not good. But in some, for example, you could say for many electronics or for many cars even, right? Buying the popular one, at least you are probably not going to go too far astray, right? If you don't have the time, you don't have the energy, you don't have the inclination to figure out, okay, what is like the one that fits my needs and desires and everything the best, and you don't know because you haven't reviewed them all, or you haven't like gone through the ownership experience of all of these possible things, going with the crowd is, I think, not necessarily a bad choice, right? Like well, the premium mediocreist car is probably like the Audi Q5 or something.
That's
but it's perfectly one. Yeah, but it's probably like
But I would say that's disposable. Like you're
it's
just
disposable and it's fine, and you'd be like, okay, fine, you leased it for like 5 years, whatever. Right, like
yeah.
it wasn't great, it wasn't bad. You didn't go completely wrong, and you didn't have to think too hard.
Yeah,
so the gain
but,
is
I mean,
more
that's
time.
You're not going to keep it. So you don't have to put that much thought into it because you're just going to lease it or drive it for 3 years and just get rid of it, and they're going to take it and sell it in some developing country for.
But like, are we talking about premium mediocre? Like, is this consumption or heirloom stuff? Because like heirloom cars is like a very niche thing.
Yeah, I would say that this kind of mindset helps when you're trying to find stuff that you want to keep for more than like 10 years, right?
Yeah.
Like if you're going to drive a car for more than 10 years, you better fucking
you
put some thought
about
into it.
Yeah, furniture is another example. You don't want
furniture.
To
you better put some thought into it, or else you're going to be buying it again after 2 years because it's either going to fall apart or you're going to hate it so much.
Or go ahead and get a 2 year bed. I mean, just go ahead.
Or just go ahead and get a disposable bed.
And just assume that you're going to replace it.
Yeah. So you either go in with the understanding that you're going to replace it, or you better.
Yeah, that's probably the better way to. That's probably like the best first filter, right? It's like, is this?
Yeah.
A, is
like,
this
am
a,
I going to keep this?
Or is this just like a temp thing?
And I think as you get older, you start to shift longer into the 10 year because at some point, 10 years becomes not that long of a time.
Exactly.
Right. Like,
yeah. It's crazy that 10 years ago, and then I'm watching movies that are like 10 years and I'm like, dude, I thought this came out 2 years ago.
Yeah. Like when you're 20, you're not thinking about stuff that you're going to be doing when you're 30, but when you're 40, you're definitely thinking about 50, right?
Oh yeah.
And you're like, okay, I'm going to spend $10,000 on this thing. Do I want to spend $10,000 again in fucking 5 years? Like probably not.
Dude, I'm fucking 46 this year. And I feel like I turned 40 about a year ago. Like I just pounded through the decade, dude. Like nothing.
Yeah.
You know? So the years are just, you know, yeah, they're shorter than I remember.
Yeah, it's, so
and,
like,
and all the other and the other thing is you, but when you're older you have a little bit more money, and I do think you wanna I feel like it would behoove me to just be like let go, kind of like your parents were finally convinced to let go of some of their hangups where like, you know, I don't know, man, maybe I'm built a little bit differently than some of my peers who were pretty eager to spend when they were young. But now I'm kind of like, you know what? I think part of life is actually about buying nice shit and knowing what to buy and knowing yourself through what your preferences are. And I think that maybe that gets muddied with like this sort of anti-materialist notion that gets passed around a lot, like, oh yeah, we're just like these shallow consumers, and I think that's to some extent true, to the extent that you're buying stuff without thinking it through and you're not really putting any real effort into like making decisions about what you're buying and why.
Yeah.
Where, but I don't think that the solution to that is like, yeah, then I'm just not going to buy anything. And I think this minimalist idea where it's just like, yeah, man, I just buy absolute bare minimum of material things because life is completely spiritual. I'm like, no, that's not true.
No, that's
I think like, a lot of it has
you don't become a monk, right? Like,
yeah. But I'm also not saying like you should overspend. I'm just saying that people should be purposeful. Nerdy.
Yeah.
People should put a lot of effort into figuring out what
you have to think about it.
Yeah.
And you have to think about it. And there's also a built when you start looking at the stuff that requires a little bit of thought before you buy it, there's also the built-in safety valve of, let's say you buy something that is a little bit more expensive and nicer and more thoughtful than what you usually buy. If in 2 weeks you wake up and you just hate yourself for it, you can just sell it. You can just sell whatever you bought.
Yeah.
And get the money back. Where you can't do that with cheap shit that nobody wants, right? You're just going to live with the hatred that you have this thing and you can't get rid of it. So if you just put a little more thought into stuff that you're going to buy anyways, but step it up a little bit, if you can afford it, there is the, you know, there's plan B, which is just get rid of it, sell it to somebody else and they can enjoy it instead of you.
There's now, a certain joy to getting like the thing that is truly perfectly optimized for you, whatever that happens to be, right? And the amount of utility per dollar that you got out of it. There's that.
Yeah, I mean, that's why I bought my suits. It's because, like, they only
You're probably happy me. Every time you put them on, right?
Oh, I'm super jacked. Yeah.
Yeah.
Would you guys I'm ever excited. Buy art?
I've bought some stuff. Like, I bought when there's this site called firstdibs.com. I bought some stuff off of there when they first launched. Right now, it's ridiculous. Like, everything on there is 50 grand, but I was on there when I first bought this place. I spent like $5,000 on art and I got like 3 or 4 things and they're still on my wall. I mean, I really like all the stuff that I bought, but it's like none of this stuff is brand like name recon, like you wouldn't recognize any of the artists or anything like that. It's just random shit that I found that I liked.
All right. Let's say you had $50,000 you wanted to spend for something. What could you buy? What would you think you would buy?
If I would buy a car.
Just like, hey guys, you got to do a Brewster's Millions things. Like you have $50,000,
and you got
to
spend
which
it.
Which is not. Here's the thing: $50,000 is actually hard to spend because it can feel like a lot, but it's also not a lot. Like you're not. That's not a lot of market power to bring $50,000 out there, right? It's not like the world's your oyster with $50K. But on the other hand, it ain't nothing to just like laugh at either. Which is why I'm saying $50,000. Like what?
I would buy a Japanese car from the '90s. That's highly desirable and will only go up in value. I know exactly what that.
Which one, like a Supra?
Oh, I already have one of those.
You have a Supra?
You have a Supra? Supra
from the 90s?
Yeah. I have a 98 turbo Supra.
How many cars do you have? You have like 4 now, right?
I have a lot of cars.
Where do you keep them?
In the garage.
How many spaces?
How big is this garage?
I have a lot of I have 3 garage spots
in
for my
building?
Cars. Yeah, and then I have street parking for my truck.
Okay.
The truck's like the daily.
The truck is the daily, right? Yeah.
This is a man who has collected high quality goods.
I'm a weirdo, man. Like I'm.
Oh, that's not weird. I like it. I like it.
Really like cars.
Yeah.
Culture, isn't it? More so than in New York. I mean, I think.
Oh, New York, you can't park.
Yeah, no. There's no way I could afford any of this in New York. There's fucking no way.
Yeah. I was thinking, like even just trying to think about your questions, like, you know, 50 grand. I have nowhere to put anything that's larger. I don't know. I guess, like, I guess I'm buying, like, 5 Milgausses or something.
Yeah, I mean, I would. So in California, I would get a car. In New York, I would probably get a watch. You know? Like, I know which watch I would get. I would get a Vacheron Constantine overseas. Dual time.
What would you do? Would you wear it or would you just store it, you think?
I would wear it. I mean, I would wear it for special occasions. Or, like, going out like, nice dinners and stuff.
Unfortunately, I just don't like watches that much, especially high-end.
Yeah, I mean, if you don't like it, then there's no point.
It doesn't give me a lot of... I like Rolexes because they have... Rolexes are still understated, I think. But, yeah, maybe I'll get a Rolex or something. I don't know, but I'm not that excited about it. But I'm sure I could convince myself to be excited about it.
Well, I mean, but, like...
I mean, there are some...
Like, what
there's some jobs where you just have to have a decent watch, right? Like, you can't...
Not mine.
Maybe not anymore. I don't know.
No, not anymore. Because you can... The thing is, you can always wear a smartwatch now, and it just... you're completely outside of the system.
Nobody cares.
Nobody cares. Nobody cares.
Nobody cares. It's like, everything like, even is done remotely. There's very little in-person...
Even in Hong Kong, where 20% of the stores in Hong Kong are watch stores, like, more and more people just wear a smartwatch.
Yeah,
because right, it just takes you completely outside the system.
You know what I would buy?
Mm.
I think I could get myself like a really, really nice camera, like a light.
There you go.
Like really nice,
maybe, like a vintage
collectible level
film lenses. Camera.
Yeah, film or digital. I mean, it doesn't matter because they use the same lenses. But it would be more about the lenses than the body. But like, I could do that. I could see myself paying. Five figures for like, you know, really, really nice like a lens.
One of the pitfalls of doing that sort of thing though, and this is also applies to cars and watches and all that, is if you end up buying something, you end up afraid to use it.
I would
or like taking it out of the house.
I would use it. Instead of buying like one really expensive one, I might buy like five. You know, get a collection.
A collection,
yeah.
So just on that point, you know, like people walking around with those big SLR cameras, right? Okay. Or digital SLRs, and they're like, I always see them just kind of hanging them around their neck, and the lens is just kind of like out there, exposed, slightly swinging around with no cap on, and I'm like, is that like what happens if they just hit something on the lens?
That's why they for those things they should have a lens hood.
They have a hood, but like not like the front is still kind of there's no
the
cap,
lens hood is supposed to keep that, you know, it's supposed to prevent the glass from actually being able to touch anything. So if they are smart, they would
seems
put
scary.
A lens hood
seems
on.
Scary.
Well, also, I mean, if they're a professional, if that's their job, maybe it's just their work camera. They don't really care, you know, whatever.
Or they might they might have an ND filter on it, which is you put that on mostly just to prevent. There from any direct contact.
Oh yeah, I guess for them it's just gonna be like a cost of doing.
So you might see that in the front they actually have a flat glass sort of filter on it. That's not part of the lens. That's a screw-on attachment.
That's like so it's like equivalent to like a screen protector.
Yeah, that's exactly. Yeah, what okay, it is. Okay, yeah, okay. They just call it an ND filter. You just screw it in.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Maybe I'll look at
the camera, car. I'm still sitting here struggling, like, what would I actually buy? I'm not sure. I don't think I could find
Bitcoin.
Anything to buy. Yeah, well, but I think that was outside the parameters of the question.
Hey, are you sold on gold? Have you bought gold? No, you're a gold guy.
Have I bought gold? Yeah, I'm a gold guy. I recently bought, I did recently buy a couple extra gold and silver coins, just for funsies.
Where'd you get them?
Not enough to
a dealer?
Atmex, a huge American precious metals dealer. So I got a couple of gold coins and
online.
I got a bunch of silver coins online. Yeah. Ordered it.
It shipped to Hong Kong.
$50 shipping insured, came in a couple of days from Oklahoma.
Wow.
And I bought a bunch of silver coins as well. And the idea with the silver coins was to, you know how kids get into like Pokemon cards and shit? And like all the other useless stuff, and I'm trying to like kind of turn them and get them into collecting silver coins, or at least something with like a little bit more. What I would argue is enduring value. Now some people will debate that with the Pokemon cards and whatever. But
what did they? How did they react to the silver and gold?
So far, they like it, because like you can get a lot of different designs, right? And the thing about the silver coin, right? Like a 1 ounce of silver coin is only like $33, right? Which is like a reasonable piece size, right, in terms of value. If you're doing that with gold, like $2,300, $2,400 for a coin, it's like, look, you can't give it to them. You can't give that to a 9-year-old, right?
Yeah.
They'll get kidnapped. So I try to like get them into that. And then I told them, look, I went on the website and there's all sorts of other coins like Snoopy characters, little Pokemon ones, whatever, like Mickey Mouse and stuff. And I told them, look, if you guys get good marks, you will order, order you whatever coin you want and stuff like that. So
let me ask you, if Bitcoin is digital gold, is Ethereum like digital silver or like what?
No, very vague.
People liken Ethereum to digital oil. Something I've heard before because you use it to power other transactions.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that's a better analogy, but I think it's still. Yeah, that's a better analogy.
I mean, these are
specifically oil, right? Specifically oil, as opposed to energy in general, right? Because there are alternatives to Ethereum.
Yeah.
Right. Like you can like a lot of stuff that you can do with Ethereum, you could just do with a database.
Bitcoin's getting down there, man. It's starting to pique my interest a little again. It might crash.
I remember again years ago, you bought Bitcoin and held it for like an hour.
Yeah, it just felt
for a $500 gain.
It wasn't, you know what? It wasn't the Bitcoin. It was the Coinbase.
It wasn't actually
the Bitcoin that was bothering me. It was the fucking Coinbase, and I just
the custody issue. The custody issue. Yeah.
And just now like, you have an ETF.
Yeah, exactly. But like the Coinbase.
But the ETFs are Coinbase custody. All the big ETFs are Coinbase custody.
I know, but they don't have.
Well, the Fidelity one is Fidelity custody. So who do you trust more, Fidelity or Coinbase?
I feel like the negotiations between a large ETF manager that's going to go and negotiate a custody agreement with Coinbase is going to get a much better deal than fucking individual consumers signing up for their terms and services.
Yeah.
And you get fucking wrecked on it, you know?
You are.
It's more the Coinbase issue. But now with the ETFs and stuff, and I'm like, oh, yeah, this thing's going back below 60. And I had this thing where I was like, okay, I'll take my gold profits, which I have now. I'll take my gold profits and maybe allocate the profits to Bitcoin on a regular basis.
Yeah, it's easy to trade now.
Yeah, it's easier to trade. You know, I can do it all within my brokerage account now. So
yeah.
But that takes a lot of the fun out of it. Like, I feel like for the people who really loved Bitcoin, they were in on it at the time when you could like maybe do a little mining and hold it.
Yeah. Now it's just too abstract.
It's become completely securitized and.
You could still do all that.
You could, but why? You know, why?
Yeah, I mean.
I mean, the running your own little mining rig at home.
Yeah. I mean, you're doing just for the love of the game at that point.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, people still compile their own Linux kernels, and it's not rare. So,
yeah.
You know.
But that's just purely for the love of the game, man. You know, that's
yeah,
not.
I mean,
you just want a working computer. That's not what you do.
No, of course not. Yeah. But, I mean, everyone also uses Linux. You know, there's a spectrum, right?
Yeah.
Your fucking Android phone is all Linux.
Is there anything in the digital or electronics realm that's worth buying as a
part of your 50 grand
quality asset or no?
Vintage Apples, vintage.
Yeah,
I don't know.
You think so?
Like vintage Commodore's stuff. All that stuff that you talked about with Jess on that one.
Yeah, but you really think that stuff is actually like? I mean, I would never use a phone.
I don't think.
I mean, again,
will they ever get to crazy amounts of money? I don't know.
Yeah, of course they will at some point, but the thing is, who's going to buy that shit other than nerds who are nostalgic for old times and just do that stuff for fun?
The one thing...
Those are the people who are going to win big because they're amassing a collection of shit that they're actually into. Whereas...
One thing that did work out well, I think, is a lot of vintage stereo and hi-fi equipment, I think, did... Some of that stuff did pretty well. Though not, like, spectacularly well, but, like... I think some of the like vinyl, some of the more rare and cool vinyl record players.
I mean, even baseball cards caught a bid like during the last few years, right?
Oh,
like,
really? Baseball cards?
Yeah, like the crazy.
There's like a big crazy, market for like, that kind of stuff, right?
Any kind of collectible.
Because the thing is, boomers got all the money. Boomers got all the money, exactly. Right? So what are boomers into? What are boomer like 81-year-old boomer who's got like $30 million?
Wine,
$300 million.
Wine. classic muscle cars. Here's
the thing is they want to relive their youth, right? So you sell them baseball cards.
I mean, that's why I have a Supra. I had one in high school, and now I have one again.
How do your parents react to your high school Supra? I want to, because it sounds like they were against it.
What's that?
How are your parents about your high school Supra?
They helped me buy it. During high school. They were fine.
Oh, really?
They were fine.
Are you serious? Yeah. Your parents aren't so.
I'm more upset about the decisions that they make for themselves, not for me.
Oh,
I was okay. You know, I was on my own. I was making my own decisions from an early age. But anyways, the boomers. So one thing that I thought would totally drop off in price was classic muscle cars, right? Because classic muscle cars during the 90s and, well, not the 90s, but like the 2000s went fucking crazy. Like they all became, all the really, really desirable ones became six-figure cars, and everyone was like shocked this would happen. And everyone thought that, okay, this is only going to be like bubble status and it's going to pop after 2008 and all that stuff. But then they just started printing money again. And all these boomers just got older and richer, and they just continued buying these things like crazy, and they're still insanely expensive. So you never know where this stuff is going to go, you know? And a lot of them bought these cars cheap after the financial crisis, and now they're looking at massive gains on their hobby, basically. I mean, it's basically a hobby, you know? So you can never tell where any of this stuff will go.
This is the end of part one of a two-part podcast. As usual, the second part will be on our Patreon feed. If you want to get access to Patreon episodes and Discord, etc., and support Plan A, you can go to patreon.com/planamag.